This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, and I'm speaking with Bernard Sumner with the new band Bad Lieutenant, and he's also a former member of New Order and Joy Division. Bernard, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Joe. Doing fine.
There you go. So I've been checking out the new record, which is called Never Cry Another Tear. I gotta say, it's a very kind of joyous record. It's a very fun record.
Well, it's totally out of character for me, that, isn't it? Is that what you're getting at, Jay?
That's what I'm getting out of it. Is that the kind of mood you've been in?
Well, you know, as a person, I guess I've got, as I've got older, I've become a happier person.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's reflected somewhat in the record. Yeah, that's fair to say, although they're not all happy, you know. It does have its moments.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm a pretty happy, contented person. Working with some happy people, you know, although, like everyone else, we have our moments.
Well, of course, some of the people in the band you've worked with before in New Order, Phil and Steven, but there's a new guy on board, Jake Evans, on vocals and guitar. Well, you do vocals and guitar as well, who you've had many great things to say about. Tell me how you happened to find Jake.
Well, I'm just trying to stay in his good books, you see. I don't like him, really. I'm just trying to stay in his good books.
Okay.
So I'm saying flattering things about him. Jake is a young guy. He's 29, I think.
Okay.
And he was a friend of Phil's. Phil was a guitarist in New Order that joined when Gillian Gilbert retired, so to speak.
Right.
They come from a small town called Macclesfield, which is where Ian Curtis came from.
A lot of
musicians there for some reason. I don't know why. And I met Jake at a birthday party. We were just all a friend's birthday in a restaurant. It was a Thai restaurant. Bizarrely, they had a guitarist and singer there playing away while you were eating your Thai food. And after a bit, I guess he got tired, this guy, and he went off and sat down. And someone said to Jake, why don't you get up and do a song, because you can do better than that guy. I didn't even know Jake was a musician, but Jake got up and he sang and played Heart of Gold by Neil Young.
Ah.
I remember thinking, well, he's got a lot of guts to do that, to get up and do that. You know, he's got a lot of balls to do that. And also, his rendition of it was good, you know, it was really good. And so I made a mental note of Jake that he was a good find, really. So when we first started the recording sessions, the writing sessions, of course, I invited Jake down to just try him out, really. And
but let me stop you for a second, though, however.
Yeah.
What was it about his version of Heart of Gold, or I guess maybe his take on Neil Young, that impressed you so much?
It wasn't particularly that. It was the fact all my bands have been put together by people. The most important thing in a band, I think, is that you get on together.
Right.
And then hopefully, if at that moment the musicianship's not there, then that can be developed if someone's got a spark of creativity. Then that can be enhanced, you know. And with Jake, the first thing was that we got on with him. It was a real laugh, you know. He was a good guy to get on with, and he made me laugh a lot.
But wait a second. Getting on together, that was never a problem in New Order.
Well, we got on together very well at the beginning.
Yes.
But as the years went by, everything went a bit, as we say in England, pear-shaped.
Ah.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been in situations where the band's not got on very well, and I didn't want to repeat that. So my first priority when putting together this band was that everybody got on, you know, at least in this early stage of our career. So Jake was great to get on with, and his rendition was pretty much, and he was playing the guitar and singing. Now, I'm always impressed by that, because I can't play the guitar and sing at the same time. I can.
Yes, you can.
I can only play very elemental guitar and sing at the same time. Where Jake was very twiddly-diddly all over the fretboard, you know, doing Hendrix-like solos in the in the song, you know, in between words. And he was obviously very proficient. And I later found out that Jake had been playing guitar since he was 5 years old.
Oh my!
So he's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit of a, well, a very naturally talented musician. But I must also big Phil up here as well, Phil Cunningham, because Phil's got a real kind of raw energy.
Right, right.
You know, he's a real thrasher. He thrashes the hell out of the guitar. So we tend to use Phil for the more aggressive stuff, and Jake for the kind of twiddly diddly, you know, more solo kind of stuff, really. So they were good kind of ammunition to have in a band, both of them. So, yeah.
Now, were you actually looking to form another band when you saw Jake?
You know, I can't remember the sequence that this stuff happened in, because I kind of saw Jake at the restaurant and was impressed by him. And then I think I got him a gig supporting New Order.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out and watched his band set. He's got his own band, which is called Rambo and Leroy.
Okay.
Yeah, which is pretty, it's pretty funny when he explained that to Japanese journalists, trying to hear him pronounce it. But so when they supported us, I went out and watched him play with his band, and I watched like half the set and was really impressed again. But I can't remember what happened next, though. Yeah, I saw him in the restaurant first, and then he supported New Order. I got him a gig supporting us, and then I was pretty convinced that he was had the talent. Now, whether or not I'd formed the group by then, I can't remember, to be honest. But,
and how did Rambo and Leroy take to you lifting, you know, one of their guys?
Oh, well, one of the reasons I did it was to try and help them get some recognition. Because they come from a small town, you know, in the north of England. And all the media and all the press are based in the south of England, in London.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how talented you are, no matter how good your band is, unless you do something pretty spectacular, then the press are lazy down there, and they won't come up and find new bands. So I thought, well, this guy's really talented. How come his talent hasn't been recognised by the press, you know? So in a way, I'm doing it to try and help Rambo and Leroy. In fact, Rambo and Leroy are three members. It's Ash on bass, Jake's brother, Matt Evans, on drums and backing vocals. And Matt also has been heavily involved in this album. He plays drums on two of the tracks, and he sings backing vocals with Jake and with me on virtually all of the tracks. So I don't see it really as poaching Jake. I'm trying to give him a platform.
Jake sings on roughly half the tracks, unless my ears are deceiving me.
I knew you were going to ask this question, because I've actually got a written breakdown here on the wall.
Okay.
Right, okay. So all in all, we've wrote 16 tracks. There's not 16 tracks on the album.
Right.
Out of those 16 tracks, Jake has sung on 3 solo. I sang on 10, and both me and Jake singing on together on 3 songs.
Okay, there you go. Because your voices are not dissimilar at times.
Yeah, that's true. But we've got kind of a bit of a different style, you know. It's funny because he's a younger man, but I'm always trying to get him to put a bit more energy into his vocal.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's quite, not croony, but quite rounded the way he sings, you know, and I suppose if the track was a bit more rocky, that would suit me a bit more. And if it was a bit less rocky, that would suit Jake a bit more.
How was it for him joining up for you? Because I have to imagine that, you know, being a younger guy and hooking up with an artist as yourself, who's had a very illustrious career in very iconic bands, it must be a pretty heady thing for him.
I think it may have been a little bit daunting for him at first, but he's not the kind of guy to get fazed by that. As I say, you know, when he got up in that restaurant, I was there in the restaurant, so if he could get up and sing a song straight out of the box in front of me, I knew that working with me on the record wasn't going to faze him at all, and that proved to be the case. You know, he's a plucky little fellow. Not wanting to sound patronising, but you know, after a bit we became mates. I'm pretty easy to get on with. and he's pretty easy to get on with. My history as a musician, really, after we'd written a couple of songs together, my history sort of just went out of the equation, really.
The name Bad Lieutenant, I have to ask, are you a big fan of the movie?
Big fan is the wrong set of words. I actually watched the movie when I was at Johnny Marr's house when I was working with Johnny with Electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a friend staying there who was watching the movie, and I just took a break from the studio, went upstairs and said, "What are you watching?" He said, "Oh, I'm watching this film, Bad Lieutenant." And then I just got into watching it, and I thought, Jesus, you know, this is so gross. How have they got away with this? Oh my God, what's Harvey Keitel doing there? Oh, I can't believe they've got him to do that. And then there was a scene where he shoots the radio out, and it was just so over the top. It was just so gross and over the top. I think I've got a bit of a black, both a dry and a black sense of humour. And although the film's not meant to be humorous, it was just so over the top, it made me kind of laugh, really. In a similar way that a Tarantino film would.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, say Kill Bill, the violence in it is so over the top that it becomes not really violence, but like cartoon type.
Now, from what I understand, you guys kind of took your time recording this record over almost, what, a two-year period, and you did it at various home studios, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it took a while, but we were kind of, there was a period where we had to learn each other's strengths and weaknesses, you know.
Yeah.
We had to learn what sort of album, I had to learn what sort of album the other guys wanted to make. They had to learn what sort of album I wanted to make. You have to learn what their record collection is, what sort of music they like, and so there's a period where you're not really writing much, but you're getting in each other's heads, you know. And that's vitally important, because unless you get into each other's heads, you don't know what you're aiming for, you don't know what the target is, you don't know what sort of songs you want to end up writing. And so we had to get on each other's wavelength, really. I had to find out what particular style Jake was good at, what he considered good music. I knew quite a bit about Phil from New Orleans.
Sure.
Days, and I knew that Phil really liked to rock out a lot, you know. Jake also had to learn about me, what sort of stuff. Although he's heard, obviously, of New Order and Joy Division, he doesn't know what kind of music I listen to when I do listen to music, you know. So there was a period of getting to know each other, and then there was just like, we had to find an engineer, we had to find the right engineer, and we wanted to find people who lived up in this area so that we didn't waste a lot of time travelling around, you know. We wanted it to be based here.
Right.
And then we tried three different drummers out. Steve wasn't available at the time because he had some personal issues, health issues with a member of his family at home.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve wasn't available. So we're trying different drummers out, different engineers, where we're going to record it, you know, what we're going to record it on. We ended up recording in three different studios, and we had to make sure each of us was on the same computer system, you know, with the same software and stuff like that. So there was a bit of preparing the ground, really, at the start of it. First sessions were done. My friend Alex James, who's the bass player from Blur.
Sure.
The first sessions were done at Alex's house, and in fact, Alex played bass on them. So we wrote about, I don't know, four, six ideas, that everyone together, all in the studio at Alex's house. Problem was, with that setup, was Alex lived 200 miles away, and he was a really busy guy.
That's a problem.
So the logistics of it were very difficult, because we'd have to find a period when Alex was free, and then travel 200 miles down the road, and then we get a three-day free session, you know, at his house, and then move back up north. What would happen then with those sessions was I would then work on the vocals on my own. So Phil and Jake were pretty much sat around and, well, waiting for me to finish the vocals. So they didn't just want to do that. So they would then go in Jake's studio and prepare a couple of other ideas, you know. And so I'd be working on the vocals for one song, and then they'd be working on the music for another song. And then they'd bring the music to me and see what I thought of it, and then I'd do some overdubs on it. I might change the arrangement, change the key or whatever, and then I say, yeah, that's a contender. Either I'll work on it, or what about you working on it, Jake? You know, we just pick and choose just like that, really.
Guitar-wise, you're not really tied in with any one guitar. In fact, you've played so many over the years. Rickenbackers, SGs, ES-330s, Teles, Strats, you can stop me anytime. In fact, I even saw an old Joy Division video where you played what's called a Shure Gold Masquerader. Yes, which is an incredible looking guitar, an incredible sounding guitar. So you play so many different ones. Were there only a couple you used on this record, or did you use your whole arsenal?
Well, there was only one, really.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I must say that the first guitar, first quality guitar that I ever bought was a Gibson SG.
Okay.
And that's what primarily I played, was my main instrument in Joy Division.
But yeah.
Unfortunately, we had all our equipment stolen in New York one day.
That happens.
Yeah, everything. And it wasn't so long after Ian had died, so it was a bit of a double tragedy, really.
Mm.
But my SG got stolen, and then I started trying different guitars out. The guitar that I, and in fact Jake and Phil, we all had this favourite guitar, which is an ES-330.
Right.
The completely hollow-bodied one.
Oh, yes.
And I use it live sometimes, but it howls a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if I use in-ear monitors, I can get away with it. But everyone sort of fell in love with that guitar. It's a 1966 version.
Yeah, yeah.
My guitar roadie bought it for me from a place in Texas about 15 years ago. And it's just a really, really beautiful, well-balanced instrument, and everyone just fell in love with that. So that was the main act, really, on the whole record.
Yeah, I think I can pick out the parts on the record where you're playing it, and it just really gets a sweet, sweet sound. And I think the fact that it howls, as you say, is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit unpredictable, and it only howls in a live situation, really, when the speakers are jacked up really high. But it's a beautiful guitar, and it's so good for rhythm, you know. There was one track, I think, some days, where Jake played his Strat, where he was doing his Jimi Hendrix impression on the solo. In fact, most of the guitar on that track is the 330, and then just for the solo in the middle, just to get a little different tone, he used his really bad Fender Stratocaster.
It is really bad
because the pickups only work for 5 minutes at a time, and then they stop working for a day.
It is a pretty hot.
I don't know where and how he managed to buy a guitar like that, but that's very, very Jake Evans. That's very typical of Jake.
It's a really good solo. What kind of amps did you use on the record?
We used one amp. I've got an AC-30. There was a guy in the 1960s who was like a cabaret artist, and he bought in 1966, again the same year as the guitar, two AC-30s. He used one and kept the other one in his loft for a spare. So a couple of years ago, this original 1966 AC-30 with still with the receipt in the back from 1966 turned up, and it's all hand-wired inside. There's no printed circuit boards at all. It's all hand-wired inside, so we just use that one amp for everything.
Okay, so what are you going to do live, though?
I've got other AC-30s that I'll use, and Jade's got a horrible Marshall amp that he wants to use, but I won't.
Why is it horrible?
It's too rock.
Well, he wants to do the Hendrix thing,
too,
you said.
Stereotypical. You know, I just think they're ugly looking amps. But I've got to say, it does sound very nice. In fact, I did use that Marshall on a couple of tracks, and it does sound really sweet, I've got to say.
Well, there you go. So, okay.
It does sound really sweet. It just looks horrible.
Oh, come on.
He'll be wanting to play a Les Paul or something like that next. But, you know, if I let the Marshall go, he'll be playing Les Pauls next, you know.
As long as it's nothing point...
Before you know it, before long, we'll be sounding like Metallica or something like that.
As long as he doesn't play any pointy guitars, you're okay.
Yeah, okay. I know what you mean.
Being that you come from Joy Division and New Order, iconic bands, is it a bit of an albatross at times, moving ahead musically, knowing that you have this illustrious musical legacy behind you that maybe people can't look beyond?
Well, I think to some people, Joy Division, New Order changed their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty tall bill to live up to.
Yeah.
I actually don't think we did change their lives. I think their lives changed when the music by those bands was out. It's a different way of looking at it. It's a tall order, you know. I think it was Bob Dylan that said we're constantly living under our own shadows, you know. And I do feel that somewhat, although with my music with my other groups, although I must say I'm incredibly proud of that heritage, obviously. But I just want to... I'm a musician, and I just want to make music and go and play a few gigs, you know. I'm not claiming I can claim your life, you know. If we've done it twice, surely that's enough. Give us a break.
Obviously, your relationship with Stephen and Phil are fine. When was the last time you spoke with Peter Hook?
Oh, a while ago now. Yeah, it's not good.
Mm-hmm. No mending of the fences there yet?
No, it's actually got worse.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
So, but that's the way it's got to be. That's the way it's got to be.
Okay. Well, the new record, Never Cry Another Tear, comes out soon, and I think it's an absolute winner. Really, really charming record, if I can use that word.
Cool. Can I just ask that, add something that we will be playing in the States in November? We're playing a few dates on the East Coast, sort of towards the end of November, and then we'll be back in the spring and playing some more, although I'm not sure where yet.
Fantastic. Well, this is Joe Basso with Music Radar, and I've been speaking with Bernard Sumner from the new band Bad Lieutenant, and of course, he was in New Order and Joy Division. Bernard, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, Joe. See ya.